I know exactly how to cut my father's throat. I have to say thanks to all those surgical textbooks I bought and read cover to cover. Soon enough, there are 5 pints of his blood all over my mother's rug, and then some. My father dies right in front of me. All I can think as I watch the light go out of his eyes is that he deserves this. He will never beat my mother again. He will never terrorize our family ever again. But a few seconds later, the relief that he has finally gone morphs into panic. I killed my father. I killed my father right in my living room. I sliced his jugular with a kitchen knife. There's no way I can argue this was an accident or even self-defense. I'm going to spend the rest of my life in prison. Unless. I scramble to my feet, my hands shaking. There's blood all over my jeans and my sneakers and my hands. There's so much on my hands. You don't realize how much 5 pints of blood is until it's all over your kitchen floor. I can't deal with this alone. It's too much. And there's only one person I can call. There is one person who might help me out of this impossible situation. I run my hands under hot water, trying to wash off the blood. The bar of soap turns pink as I scrub my hands with it, but after a lot of hot water, the soap turns back to white and my hands look normal again. It's more than I can say for my jeans and sneakers. Everything I'm wearing will have to be burned. But for now, I just need my hands clean enough to use my phone. I select the first name from my list of contacts, the person I call the most. I stand in the kitchen, my head throbbing as the phone rings repeatedly on the other end of the line. Pick up. Come on, buddy, I need you. Hello? A familiar voice says. Slug! I choke out. I need your help. My best friend doesn't hesitate. Sure, what do you need? I look over at my father's motionless body lying on the living room rug. I did something really bad, like really bad. A pause. Okay, what's going on? I can't tell you on the phone. I can't help you unless you tell me what's going on. Can I actually trust Slug? My gut tells me I can. But what if he shows up here and freaks out? Still, I don't have any alternative. I can't deal with this situation by myself. Could you borrow your parents' car and come over? Sure. They already went to bed. They won't even know I'm gone. He says it so cavalierly. Slug's parents are in their 60s. He was a not-so-happy accident, and they don't have the energy to deal with him. So he does pretty much whatever he wants, and they don't care. It's perfect. 15 minutes later, Slug's parents' Oldsmobile pulls into our driveway. I watch from the window as he steps out, stretching his long legs for a moment before walking over to the front door. I yank open the door before he can hit the doorbell. Slug looks surprised, his skeletal wrist frozen in midair. Get inside, I tell him. Jesus, Tom! He stumbles into the foyer before I can slam the door closed practically on his foot. He looks like he's going to say something more, but then he notices all the blood staining my t-shirt. His mouth falls open. Tom! I didn't have a choice, I say tightly, even though that's not true. My heart is pounding as Slug pushes past me into the living room. It takes him all of half a second to notice my father lying dead on the rug. He inhales sharply, and I hold my own breath, waiting to see what he says. I've known Slug most of my life, and I trust him, but it's safe to say this falls out of the realm of the usual favors that a guy can ask of his best friend. So, Slug says slowly, you finally killed that son of a bitch. It was an accident, I say lamely. Yeah, some accident. His throat is sliced open. I run a shaking hand through my hair, which I now realize also has blood in it. Jesus Christ, there is blood everywhere. That's something you don't learn in the anatomy textbooks, that's for sure. I've spent the last 15 minutes cleaning blood from the kitchen floor, and I've done a decent job, but I don't know what we're going to do about my mom's rug. We'll need some sort of extra-strength carpet cleaner. And I'm sure even then there will be traces left behind. You can't save the rug, Slug says, as if reading my mind. We can wrap him in it. Wrap him? When we get rid of the body. Slug flashes me an exasperated look. Isn't that what you called me to help you with? I look at my best friend. His face is really greasy, like the surface of a pizza, and his forehead is suffering from a particularly severe acne attack. But the craziest thing is how eerily calm he seems. I'm about to jump out of my skin, but Slug is cool as a cucumber. We'll wrap him up in the rug and put him in my trunk, Slug says. Do you have any garbage bags I can line the trunk with? Sure. When I don't budge, Slug lifts an eyebrow. What are you waiting for? It's not like we've got forever to take care of this. Okay. How many do we need? 6 should do it. How does he know the exact number of garbage bags he'll need to line the trunk of his car for a dead body? Or maybe I don't want to know the answer to that question. After I bring him the garbage bags, I head upstairs to change my clothes. I don't know what exactly to do with my bloody t-shirt and jeans, but I'm not leaving the house wearing my father's blood. I take a second to look in the bathroom mirror while I'm upstairs. Good thing I do, because there's a lot more blood on my face and hair than I would have guessed. Fortunately, the color of my hair is so dark, you can't see it. I'll have to take a long shower after we're done dealing with this. The skin of my face is extremely pale, like I'm half dead, and there are dark purple rings under my eyes that look like bruises. I look like I've been awake since last week. I put my phone on the dresser while I change clothes, and it buzzes while I'm in the bathroom. A text message. I hurry back to flip open the screen, and a message pops up from Daisy. You need to watch this video. I don't click on the video, which looks like it's something about a cat playing the piano. I'm not in the mood for cute animals right now. I'm not sure if I ever was, but definitely not now. I'm so far from being interested in cute animals, it's not even funny. I hate to ignore a text message from Daisy, but I can't bring myself to reply. When I get back downstairs, Slug has managed to roll the carpet around my father's body. It's almost exactly the right length to cover him. Lucky. Slug straightens up when he sees me, wiping his hands on his own pair of jeans. His jeans are too short. Hand-me-downs from one of his older brothers. Slug is the only one of his siblings who is freakishly tall. I got my trunk covered with the garbage bags, he reports. And I turned the car around so that the trunk is up against the garage door, but I couldn't back in because your dad's car is already in there. Anyway, we can just throw him right in there. Nobody will see. Right. It's hard not to be bothered by the fact that Slug is so good at this. And Slug isn't good at anything. Well, besides eating bugs. You okay, Tom? He squints at me. You're not going to start freaking out, are you? I'm okay, I manage. Good. Slug eyes the large lump of carpet on the floor. Because I can't lift him on my own. This is a two-person job. Even for two of us, it's a struggle. Slug lifts one end and I lift the other. But my father was a big guy, and we're both grunting and trying our best not to drop him. Fortunately, Slug already has the trunk and the garage door open, so we make a beeline. As we get closer, I start to panic that the body isn't going to fit, but Slug doesn't seem worried, and sure enough, we manage to get it stuffed inside. As we slam the trunk closed, I fight a wave of nausea. I don't even know how we're going to get rid of this body. We have a long night ahead of us. But suddenly, none of that matters anymore. Because when I look up from the trunk, I realize someone has been watching us. There is a figure standing on the sidewalk, and they have seen our every move. Oh, Jesus. It's Allison.
Chapter 30.
Allison saw us stuffing my father's dead body into the trunk. She had to have seen. It's dark out, but not that dark. And our porch lights are on, providing extra light. I don't know why I didn't turn the damn porch lights off. What's wrong with me? That's like murder 101. turn out the stupid lights before going outside to stuff a dead body in the trunk. But then again, maybe she didn't see. She's got her dog with her, a mutt who seems a lot friendlier than she is. And maybe she's too focused on picking up the dog's poop or whatever dog owners do during walks. There's no guarantee she knows what we were doing. I mean, even if she saw everything, all she knows is that we were stuffing a carpet into the trunk. Maybe we're having the house reupholstered. Of course, if she hears my father has gone missing, she'll be able to put two and two together pretty easily. Hi, Allison, I croak. Slug looks up sharply at the sound of her name. He stiffens, but doesn't say a word. Under other circumstances, he would be nudging me and talking about how hot she is. Hello, Allison says tonelessly. I sprint halfway across my yard to talk to her. It's too dark to see her face, which means I can't tell what she's thinking. Did she see us? Did she? Walking your dog? I ask. She looks down at the leash in her hand. Yeah. Kinda late for that, isn't it? She lifts a shoulder. Rufus will protect me. As if on cue, the mutt starts growling at me. Great. The dog is going to maul me now. Just what I need. Shush, Rufus! Allison hisses at her dog. The dog won't stop growling. He's really worked up, and now he's straining at the leash, hard enough to jerk Allison forward. Except, he's not going for me. He's trying to run past me. Sorry, Allison grunts. I don't know what's gotten into him. I don't either, until Rufus dashes over to the Oldsmobile. Slug looks panicked for a moment, backing away from the car with his hands up, but the dog comes to an abrupt halt at the trunk of the car. And then he starts barking like a wild animal, all his energy directed at the trunk. You got any raw meat in there? Allison asks us. He only acts this way around raw meat. I don't even know how to begin to answer that, because I am frozen in absolute horror. But then Slug speaks up. Yeah, I was just grabbing some hamburger meat and hot dogs from Tom for a barbecue my family is having tomorrow. Well, that would do it. Allison tugs on the leash, trying to pull away a very reluctant Rufus. By the way, Tom, have you had a chance to talk to Daisy? Please, not this, not now. Not yet. But soon. She peers at me through her thick glasses. Right? Right, I say tightly. Satisfied with my answer, Allison manages to pull Rufus away from the trunk of the Oldsmobile, and once they're back on the sidewalk, the dog reluctantly continues on his way. Slug and I watch Allison walk away, both of us practically afraid to breathe. She saw, he says, when she is for sure out of earshot. She had to have seen. I look over at Slug, who is staring off into the distance, where Allison is only a tiny dot. I don't think she did. It's pretty dark. She knows we were doing something, he points out. And that damn dog wouldn't stop barking at the trunk. Once she finds out your dad is missing, she's going to put it all together. Maybe not. Come on, are you really that stupid, Tom? I rub my face with the palms of my hands. So what are we supposed to do about it? Slug is quiet. I don't know, but it's a big loose thread. I can't deal with this. I've already got enough to deal with. We still have a body in the trunk we have to get rid of. I can't even begin to think about Allison right now. What are we going to do about the body? I was going to say maybe we should throw him in the river. Make it seem like he got mugged and then tossed. Slug fingers the trunk of his car. But now that Allison saw us, I'm thinking we should bury him, so they don't find him for a while. Bury him, like Brandy Healy was buried. Fine, I say. Should I grab a shovel? Slug shakes his head. I already got a couple in the back seat. Of course he does.
Chapter 31.
4 hours later, we're driving back into town, the trunk of the Oldsmobile empty. My father's body is buried in the ground in what looked like an abandoned hiking trail about 90 minutes away from here. Slug knew exactly where to go. He said something about his brother taking him there to camp when he was little, and I didn't question it. I have to assume he's telling the truth, because the alternative is too terrible. Slug has the radio on in the car, and he's singing along to a Dr. Dre song. He doesn't look like a guy who just buried a dead body, even though his fingernails still have dirt ground into them. You sure your parents won't be pissed you were gone all night? I ask. Nah. He taps out a beat on the steering wheel. My dad sleeps like a rock, and my mom pops Ambien like candy. They won't even know I left the house. Oh, okay. But I need to get some sleep. He lets out a yawn. So you're on your own getting your house cleaned up. I don't mind that part. Sleep seems all but impossible, so I may as well spend the night scrubbing the kitchen floor with bleach. Get all your bloody clothes into the washing machine, he tells me. Lots of steaming hot water, detergent, bleach, the works. Why is Slug so damn knowledgeable about this stuff? Okay. When is your mom getting back home? She's gone another day. I squirm in my seat. There's dirt on the seat of my pants, and it's making me uncomfortable. But they might notice when he doesn't show up for work tomorrow. Of course, that's not too unusual for him. What are you going to tell your mom? I'll just say he took off on a bender. He's done it before. One time he was gone for over a week. She'll be worried, but she won't call the cops right away, because she'll know that'd end up being more trouble for him. We might have 3 or 4 days before she starts to get concerned. Of course, the fact that his car is still in our garage is a red flag, but it's too risky to get rid of the car. Also, Slug adds, we have to figure out what to do about Allison. I look up sharply. What to do? She saw us, Tom. I know, but... I rub at the knees of my jeans, which are caked with dirt and blood in equal parts. She didn't really see anything. I don't think she did, anyway. Yeah? You want to bet your freedom on that? So what are we supposed to do? Slug is quiet as gangster rap music plays in the background. His eyes stay pinned on the dark road ahead of us, illuminated by the headlights. Slug? I'm just saying, Tom, it's a problem. A big problem. I shake my head. I thought you liked Allison. You're always talking about how great she is. How she's like a sexy librarian. She is, he shrugs. But she saw us tonight, and if we don't do anything about it, it could be a problem. Do you really want to take that risk? Yes, I say firmly. I want to take the risk. Slug doesn't say anything. He just keeps driving. I'm hoping that's the end of it. Allison didn't see anything. I know she didn't. If she had... she definitely would have said something.
Chapter 32. Present Day. Sydney. Date number 3 is just as amazing as date number 1 and date number 2. This time, Tom and I get poke bowls. I've never been that into poke, but Tom was going on and on about it during our last date, and he told me he knew a great place, which turned out to be not far from my apartment building. So we got our poke bowls, and as always, he grabbed the check before I could even try to pay. And now we are walking back to my apartment. And I have shaved my legs. So guess what? I say. I was passing by a liquor store, and I bought a bottle of tequila. Tequila? Tom nods in approval. I haven't had tequila in years. Brings back memories of college. I even bought limes to go with it, I say. You have to, right? I'm fairly sure it's illegal to drink tequila without a lime. That's true, I say. My ex is a cop, and I think he's arrested people for that. Tom stiffens at my mention of Jake. I curse under my breath. I shouldn't have talked about an old boyfriend in front of a potential new boyfriend. Or maybe Tom is my actual boyfriend now rather than a potential boyfriend. Either way, I'm sure he doesn't want to hear about Jake. So, he says, you have an ex who's a cop? Yeah, but it was a while ago. Are you still in touch? Not at all. At least, not until very recently. But he doesn't need to know that part. Sorry, I didn't mean to bring up an ex. That was dumb.
No worries. Everybody has a past, right?
Tom mentioned before that he had been at the tail end of a relationship when we first met, but he has scrupulously avoided talking about it again. Aside from that one statement, he acts like I am the first girl he's ever dated. It's nice, actually. The last thing you want is a guy who is hung up on his ex. And yet, I'm curious. I'm curious about the kind of girls he dated before me. He is objectively a very good catch, and I have to believe he has dated some beautiful women. But what I want to know even more than that is why those relationships ended. I suppose if we're together long enough, I'll find out. It always comes out. When we're about 3 blocks from my apartment building, Tom stops short. When I try to keep walking, he gives me a curious look.
Where are you going? He asks.
To my apartment, I say. He frowns. He looks up at the building we're standing in front of. It hits me now that this is where he rescued me from real Kevin.
I thought you lived here.
Oh, no. I shake my head. I was pretending to live here so that guy wouldn't show up at my front door.
Oh, he laughs. Smart thinking. Okay, then, lead the way.
He licks his lips and gives me a meaningful look.
I can't wait for that tequila.
Me either. As we walk the remaining 3 blocks, he laces his fingers through mine, which I find oddly sweet. But when we reach my block, he suddenly yanks his hand away from mine. And then, when we come to a halt in front of my building, all the color drains from his face.
You live here? He gasps.
It's not as fancy as it looks, I say teasingly. I start up the steps to my front door, but Tom hasn't budged. I don't know what is going on with him. He's holding on to the banister, and he looks like he's about to be sick. Tom, I say, are you okay? He rubs his gut.
I'm not sure. I don't feel so hot. Maybe it was the poke.
I would tell him to go home, but he doesn't even look like he can make it there. Also, I've cleaned my apartment top to bottom and made my legs as smooth as a baby's bottom. After all that, it would be so disappointing if he didn't come upstairs. So I grab him by the hand and give him a tug. Just come up for a minute, okay? Tom reluctantly lets me pull him up the stairs and into my building, although he looks like he's being led to the electric chair. While we're in the elevator, his eyes are darting all over the place.
How long have you lived here?
He asks me. About 2 years. He mouths the words, 2 years, as he runs a hand through his black hair.
And do you know a lot of people in the building?
Okay, that's a strange question to ask. Not really.
Not really?
It's New York. Everyone keeps to themselves, right?
Right.
He mumbles, but he doesn't look entirely satisfied by my answer. I did have one close friend in the building, I finally admit. But she was murdered a few months ago. He gawks at me. He opens his mouth, but no sound comes out. The building is safe, though, I quickly add. You don't have to worry about me. They think this guy she was dating was the one who killed her, but nobody can find him. He was apparently using a burner phone to contact her the whole time, if you can believe that.
Jesus, he says. Wow. They have no idea who he was, huh?
If they did, he'd be in jail, wouldn't he? By the time we get to my apartment, I'm beginning to wonder if this is a mistake. Tom seems really antsy, and I don't understand why. I would think he was freaked out about what I told him about Bonnie's murder, but he was already panicked before I said a word. What does he have against my building? Did he hear a rumor that it's haunted by an evil spirit? Is there an odor I'm not aware of? Not that I loved this building so much. Ever since one of my closest friends was killed here, it's like there's a dark presence. And I still think about her all the time. I might have moved on enough to start dating again, but I'm not going to forget Bonnie. Never. I hope Jake finds the monster who killed her. I won't be able to completely relax until he has. When we get into my apartment, I head straight to the kitchen to grab the bottle of tequila. I feel like this is the kind of thing that alcohol might fix. Tom follows me into the kitchen, his brow deeply furrowed.
Sydney,
he says. I grab one of the limes from the refrigerator. I take a knife and start cutting it into slices. I'll have our drinks ready in 2 minutes.
I think I'm going to pass.
He rests a hand on the kitchen counter, his fingers obsessively drumming against the marble.
I just remembered I have an early meeting tomorrow morning.
A meeting with the dead bodies? He shoots me a look.
No, it's a staff meeting.
He is so full of it. A staff meeting? Really? How come an hour ago there was no staff meeting? Anyway, I've never met a guy who wasn't willing to trade sleep for sex. No, he wants out of here. Except why? Why is he so freaked out all of a sudden? What did I do wrong? Either way, I have a feeling that when Tom leaves this apartment, I'll never see him again. I'm so aggravated that the knife slips. The blade nicks my left index finger, which is holding the lime in place, and because I'm me, there is instantly a pool of blood below my finger. Shit! I cry. Great. This night is just getting better and better.
Jesus! Tom gasps. You really cut yourself badly.
It occurs to me now that on 3 of the 4 occasions that I have encountered Tom, I have been bleeding significantly. If he weren't eager to leave before, this should definitely do the trick. Good job, Sid. But when I look up at him, some of the color has returned to his cheeks. He doesn't look at all disturbed that I am once again bleeding profusely. But I suppose he is a doctor. He even knew what von Wildebrand factor was before I told him.
Where's your first aid kit?
He asks me. It's on the top shelf in the bathroom. Tom dashes off to my bathroom, and a few seconds later he returns with the kit. Meanwhile, I'm using paper towels to try to staunch the flow of blood. It is surprisingly ineffective. This is the kind of cut that would bleed a lot even in a normal person. So in someone like me, it's a slightly terrifying amount of blood. It's cheap horror movie amounts of blood.
Wow.
Tom gazes down into my first aid kit.
You are really well stocked.
Thanks.
This is a premium kit.
He sifts through the contents with growing excitement.
Tweezers, scissors, a cold compress. You've even got a tourniquet in here.
Do you think I need a tourniquet?
No.
He grins at me, his shoulders finally relaxed again.
I'm just saying, this is really a primo kit. Now let me get this cleaned up for you.
My personal experience is that most people are at least a little squeamish when it comes to the amount of blood I manage to squirt out. I once cut my finger in front of Gretchen, and she ran out of the room clutching her hand to her mouth. But Tom isn't squeamish. At all. He uses some gauze to hold pressure on my wound, and when it seems slightly under control, he constructs what is actually a very effective bandage on my left index finger. Usually, I need to change my first bandage about 5 minutes after putting it on, but this one might make it till the next morning. Thank you, I say as I admire his handiwork. It's useful dating a doctor. Too bad we will never see each other again. That meeting excuse was such bullshit. But weirdly, Tom seems to have forgotten all about his meeting, and helping me with the cut on my finger seems to have calmed him down. He stands next to me in the kitchen, leaning against the counter, a smile playing on his lips.
Happy to be of service.
I look up into his brown eyes, and once again they are filled with desire, after I thought it had vanished on the street outside my building. He holds my gaze, and then he drops his lips onto mine. After a kiss that practically melts my bones, Tom murmurs in my ear.
You want to take this to the bedroom?
What about your meeting?
Sleep is overrated.
What about our tequilas?
All I want,
he whispers in my ear,
is you.
Okay, then.
Chapter 33. Before. Tom.
The next morning, it feels like it was all an awful dream. It doesn't help that I only slept about 2 hours, which were broken up by dreams in which my father burst through our front door, covered in dirt, a gaping hole in his neck. Maybe it really was all a dream. After all, how could I have killed my own father and buried his body out in the woods? I drag myself out of bed and splash water on my face until I feel a little more awake. My mother doesn't usually let me drink coffee, but I could use a cup this morning like nobody's business. The whites of my eyes are laced with red, and my black hair won't quit sticking up, no matter how hard I try to smooth it down with water. When I get out of the bathroom, I pass my parents' bedroom. Part of me is hoping that my father will be lying in bed, snoring loud enough to wake the dead, and that the whole thing really was an extremely vivid dream. But of course, he's not there. He never will be again. I throw on my clothes in a haze and stumble down the stairs, clinging to the banister to keep from tumbling to my death. It isn't until I get downstairs to find the rug still missing from the living room that it hits home. I killed my father last night. I slashed his throat. I wrapped his body in the rug and buried him in the woods. I stand in the spot where the rug used to be, struggling to feel any kind of emotion for the man who called himself my father. I didn't love him. I don't know if I ever did. And I'm not sorry he's dead. He deserved to die. He deserved even worse than what happened to him. But even so, I shouldn't have killed him. Murder is wrong, and I know that. But when I had that knife in my hand, I couldn't stop myself. The urge to plunge the knife into his soft belly was almost overwhelming. And the truth is, I enjoyed watching him die. It was one of the best moments of my life. There's something very wrong with me. My mother and Daisy might not see it, but Allison sees it, and so does Slug. I don't know what to do about it. But Allison was right about one thing. I'm dangerous. I stumble to the kitchen and start up the coffee machine. I usually make myself a cup whenever my mother isn't around to tell me not to. Tomorrow, she's coming home from Seattle. And the first thing she's going to ask when she comes through the door is, "Where is your father?" I'll just tell her I haven't seen him. Better to play dumb. Bill Brewer is notoriously unreliable, and it wasn't my job to babysit him while she was gone. While I'm waiting for the coffee to brew, my phone rings in my pocket. Sure enough, it's my mother. Probably trying to catch me before school. I consider letting it go to voicemail, but if she can't track down either of us, she might really call the police. Better to take the call. "Hi, Mom," I say into the phone. I'm trying to sound like a guy who hasn't spent most of the night awake. "You sound exhausted, Tommy." Oh well, I guess that didn't work. "Is everything okay?" "Yeah, sure. How is Uncle Dave?" "He's doing well. They put a stent in his heart. Did you know they could do that?" "Yes. Even though it's a long way away, I've considered becoming a cardiac surgeon. I love the idea of cutting through a person's chest and getting to see their heart within. I would love to hold an actual heart in my hand. A human one, not the cow's heart that we dissected in biology a few months ago. Of course, if I were a surgeon and looking into a living person's chest, would I be able to stop myself from doing something stupid? When I close my eyes, I can still see my hand plunging the knife into my father's belly. "Listen, Tom," my mother's voice jogs me out of my thoughts. "Your father isn't answering his cell phone. Is he around?" Before I can answer, she adds, "If he's sleeping, don't wake him up." Of course, she doesn't want to get screamed at by my father for disturbing his precious slumber, or risk his taking out his anger on me. "I think he's at work." "This early?" "I guess so." She's silent on the other line. "But you did see him come home last night, right?" "Right." "Technically, it's true." "Okay. Well, maybe I'll try him at the hardware store then." "Are you sure it's a good idea to bother him? He didn't seem to be in a good mood." "So you did see him this morning then?" "Damn. It feels like my mother is determined to catch me in a lie, and she doesn't even have any idea what I've done. I mean, he just seems like he's in a bad mood lately. Like, always, you know? That's all. Okay. She's quiet again on the other end of the line, thinking this over. Finally, she says, I won't bother him, but can you text me when he gets home tonight? Sure. Thank you, Tommy. I love you so much, sweetheart. Uh-huh. Bye, Mom. I put down the phone, my brain running a mile a minute. What am I going to do tonight? Do I pretend my father came home? That seems like a bad idea. I don't want to get caught in a lie. I gulp down the cup of coffee, grab my backpack off the floor in the foyer where I dropped it last night, and head out in the direction of school. The weather is nice, brisk and breezy, with the promise of hitting the 60s this afternoon. It's hard to enjoy it, though. I can't stop thinking about last night, and about what I'm going to do when my mother gets home, and about the Allison problem. I have this feeling it's all going to work out, though. I'm not sure how I know it, but it's like a little voice in my ear whispering, "It's going to be okay, Tom. It's all going to get taken care of." I don't know if it's the fresh air or what, but by the time I get to school, I'm feeling pretty good. Yes, I did something unthinkable last night, but I did a good job covering my tracks. Slug will keep my secret, and I'm certain Allison didn't see a thing. Nobody is going to find out. It's all going to work out for me. And then, I see the police cars parked in front of the school. There are two of them again. There's been one parked there intermittently since Brandy's body was found, but this is the only time since that first day that two cars are parked in front of the school. And then, just when I'm starting to panic, a third police car pulls up. Oh no. Could this have to do with my father? Did they already figure out what I did, and now the police are here to arrest me and Slug? No, that's impossible. Except the police are here for a reason. Three cars. Something terrible must have happened. There are a few clusters of students in front of the school, and everyone is talking in hushed tones. What the hell happened? I'm going to lose my mind if I don't figure it out very soon. Before I can approach one of the students, a voice calls out my name. Tom! Tom! I turn around just in time to see Daisy hurling herself at me. She was upset when Brandy's body was found, but that was nothing compared to now. She clings to me, her body shaking with sobs. I stroke her golden hair, trying to comfort her, even though I don't know what's happened. Daisy, I murmur, calm down. Everything is going to be okay. Daisy raises a tear-streaked face.
What are you talking about? How can anything possibly be okay? Allison is missing.
Allison is missing? Jesus Christ. I think I'm going to be sick.
Chapter 34. Present Day. Sydney. That was unbelievable would be the only word to describe it. Although it doesn't seem strong enough. It feels like a new word needs to be created to encompass the last 2 hours spent in my bedroom. Like, I don't know, mind-blowingly unbecredge-fabulous. Except it still doesn't seem like enough. Tom put on quite the performance. If this whole doctor thing doesn't work out for him, he has other career options. That's all I'm saying. Wow. He says, as I snuggle in the crook of his arm. That was incredible. Unbecredge-fabulous, actually. Except, I don't understand why he is acting like I'm the one who made it incredible. The best I could say is maybe it was both of us. Maybe we have some sort of incredible chemistry. How is he still single? I really can't wrap my head around it. Tom tightens his grip around my shoulders, making me feel all warm and cozy. I'm not sure if this meeting was fictional or not, but he doesn't seem in a hurry to leave anymore. I almost feel like if I asked him to move in, he would eagerly agree. That really was amazing, I say. I feel like I need a cigarette or something, even though I don't actually smoke. He laughs. I know what you mean. Honestly, the first time I saw you, I got this feeling about you. And I just knew we would be great together, you know? I know. I felt the exact same way. My phone buzzes on the nightstand, which is over on his side of the bed. A text message. Tom shifts slightly, and as he turns his head to glance down at my phone, his body tenses. Uh-oh.
Jake wants to know if you got home safely from your date, he says. So, what would you like to tell him?
Wow. Thanks, Jake, for spoiling our post-coital bliss. I reach for my phone, groaning at Jake's message on the screen. It's even worse than I expected.
Please let me know you got home safely tonight. And if you need me to do a background check on this guy, I'll do it. Don't trust anyone.
That was an interesting thing to say,
Tom says tonelessly.
Mind if I ask who Jake is?
I grimace. Remember how I said I have an ex-boyfriend who is a cop? Well, that's him.
I thought you said you didn't talk to him anymore. And yet, for some reason, you have to tell him you're safe when you get back from dates.
I know. I sit up next to Tom in bed. He doesn't seem interested in cuddling anymore, and there is an extremely wary expression on his face. Look, we reconnected because he's been investigating some local cases lately, and he's gotten a little paranoid. I shouldn't humor him, though.
Uh-huh.
I'm putting a stop to it, I promise. I tilt my phone in Tom's direction so that he can see the words I am typing on the screen. I'm sorry, but my social life is none of your business. I don't need you to do a background check on anyone. I send the message and then look back over at Tom. Okay, are we good?
I guess so.
But his tone is still guarded.
How serious were things with that guy?
I tuck a loose strand of hair behind my ear. I'm not going to tell you it wasn't serious. We did live together, but it ended years ago. Like I said, I just happened to run into him recently, that's all.
Okay.
Look, it's not like we're kids. I'm sure you've lived with women in the past. He hesitates, and I'm not even sure what I want his answer to be. I don't want to hear about some super serious relationship he had and why it went wrong. But at the same time, if he's never lived with a woman by his age, that's also a red flag.
No, he finally says. I haven't.
Okay, he is in his mid-30s. How is it possible he has never had a relationship serious enough for attempted cohabitation? Definitely commitment issues.
Oh. My career has taken a lot of time, he says, somewhat defensively. I mean, between medical school and residency, and I take calls at the hospital, I've been very focused on that.
Of course, nobody is as absorbed in his career as Jake, and still he managed to get married once, and we lived together. And it's not like Tom is an antisocial weirdo. There's something he isn't telling me. I'm sure of it. Have you ever been in love? I blurt out. He seems shocked by the question. He stares at me, his bare chest rising and falling.
Finally, he says. Yes, once. But it was a long time ago.
A long time ago?
High school. He rubs his face with his palms. I knew her since we were kids, but we didn't start dating until high school. She was the most amazing person I had ever known, and I genuinely thought we would get married. We were only 16, so in retrospect it sounds really dumb. But that's what I thought. That's what I wanted more than anything.
So what happened? He squeezes his eyes shut.
She died.
I clasp a hand over my mouth. Oh my God, I'm so sorry.
Yeah.
He turns away.
Honestly, I really don't want to talk about it.
It's okay, I say gently. We don't have to talk about it. Even though this must have happened 20 years ago, the pain on his face is raw. He obviously really loved this girl. I wonder what happened to her. An accident?
Cancer? What claims the life of a 16-year-old girl? At least I finally have an answer as to why Tom is still single after all these years. He's in love with a dead girl.
Chapter 35. Before. Tom. Allison Danziger is missing. Daisy fills me in on most of the facts, although she's too upset to make much sense at first. Apparently, when Allison never came to breakfast this morning, her mother went upstairs to make sure she was awake, and her bed was empty. That was about an hour ago. There's an Amber Alert for Allison, and the police are hoping she just ran away. They say she had a minor argument with her parents last night.
There's no way Allison would ever run away, Daisy confides in me. She sometimes fought with her parents, but she would never want to worry them. She's not like that. She is such a sweet and good person.
Uh-huh, I say, even though I disagree. I wonder how Daisy would feel about her best friend if she knew Allison was blackmailing me into breaking up with her. Daisy wipes her puffy, swollen eyes.
I have this terrible feeling something really bad has happened to her.
I feel the exact same way, but I'm not going to tell her that. I'm not that sadistic.
I bet she's fine. Maybe she just went out for an early walk and her parents overreacted. No.
Daisy shakes her head.
Allison would never go on a walk without Rufus. He goes nuts if she goes out without him. He starts barking up a storm.
You should see him around dead bodies. I bet she'll turn up. Don't worry. They're going to be questioning all the students again, because it worked so well before. Daisy explains this to me while I try to ignore my growing uneasiness. Allison didn't run away. This isn't some kind of misunderstanding. I part ways with Daisy after entering the school. Even though it's at the other side of the building, I head straight for Slug's locker. I manage to catch him there, tossing a couple of his books inside, looking like he doesn't have a care in the world. When he sees me, he waves. Hey, Tom! How does he do that? After the night we had last night, how can he pretend like nothing even happened? He doesn't even look tired. His acne even looks a little better. Hey, I clear my throat. Did you hear that Allison is missing?
I did hear about that.
I guess someone took care of our little problem for us, huh? And then he winks at me. I nearly choke.
Slug, I whisper.
You didn't. I mean, last night.
Relax, Tom.
He slams his locker closed and snaps the padlock back into place.
I didn't do anything to Allison, and neither did you, right? Sometimes things just work out in your favor. Call it luck.
Luck is when you're playing poker and you get a full house. Luck isn't a teenage girl disappearing because she knows something about you that you'd rather she didn't know. But it's clear Slug doesn't see it the same way. And at that moment, I realize something very important. I might be dangerous, but Slug is something far worse.
Chapter 36.
Just like after they found Brandy's body, the police call students into the principal's office one by one, searching for information that will help them locate Allison. I am much higher up on the list this time. When I get to the principal's office, Chief Driscoll is waiting for me there, just like last time. He's wearing a starched white dress shirt and a tie checked with several shades of brown. He has a grim expression on his broad face, and there's a deep crevice between his eyebrows. He is the chief of police in this town, and the fact that something bad happened to two girls in a short period of time doesn't look good for him. He wants to find Allison in one piece and return her to her family. Unfortunately, that's not going to happen.
Hello, Tom.
He regards me without the slightest hint of a smile.
Please have a seat.
Like last time, I settle into one of the plastic chairs in front of the desk. Before my talk with him about Brandy, I had never even been in the principal's office. I'm not the kind of kid who gets in trouble like that.
I'm sure you know what this is about, he says.
I hear Allison is missing.
Yes. He scratches at the stubble on his chin. Her parents saw her go to bed last night, and then she wasn't in her bed this morning.
So, someone broke into the house?
He shakes his head. No signs of that. So it looks like she opened her door for somebody she knew, or else she left the house on her own.
I can read the message between the lines. He thinks one of the students is responsible. Possibly the very same one who was supposed to meet Brandy the night she was killed.
Is there any reason you know of that Allison might have left her house in the middle of the night last night?
I hesitate for only a split second. No.
Are you sure, Tom?
Damn. Why did I hesitate? I bet Slug won't hesitate when Chief Driscoll asks him the same thing.
I'm sure. Because I'm very worried about Allison. I'd like to find her and bring her home as soon as we can. And anything you know, no matter how unimportant you might think it is, could be the thing that helps us find her.
I spread my arms apart. I'm sorry, I don't know anything. I didn't know Allison that well.
Tom?
The chief's shrewd eyes zero in on me.
Why are you talking about her in the past tense?
My heart sinks into my stomach. I don't know her that well. My face feels like it's on fire. Sorry.
She's your lab partner, and she's Daisy's best friend.
Damn, he's done his homework. I knew her, but it's not like we were friends. Oh, Christ, what's wrong with me? Our friends, I mean. I am definitely not impressing him. He looks at me for a long time. Then finally, he laces his fingers together and leans forward.
Why aren't you friends?
Because she hated me. Because she was threatening me and blackmailing me. I don't know. We're different people, different interests.
I see.
He leans back again, but there's a curious expression on his face.
So you and Allison don't get along?
I didn't say that. I just said that we weren't friends, aren't friends. Against my will, the volume of my voice is going up. I clear my throat, trying to get it back to normal. We get along just fine. Please, please let this be over soon.
That's not what Allison's friends told me, he says.
My heart sinks. Oh?
They told me Allison hated you, that she was trying to convince Daisy to break up with you.
The palms of my hands have become sweaty, and I rub them on my jeans. I didn't know that.
No?
My mouth is too dry to get out any words, so I can only shake my head. Still, this isn't that big a deal, is it? Yes, Allison hated me. But that's not proof that I killed her.
One more question, he says. Where were you last night?
He's asking for an alibi. That's not good. I was home.
The whole night?
Yes.
With your parents?
My mom is in Seattle visiting my aunt and uncle, I say. So it was just my dad.
Okay, he says thoughtfully. I'll have to give your father a call then.
Sure. Good luck with that. Anything else?
Yes, he says. You don't need to walk Daisy home from school anymore. I'm going to be picking her up myself.
His message is loud and clear. He doesn't trust me around his daughter anymore. To be fair, I doubt he trusts anyone, but definitely not me.
Chapter 37. Present Day. Sydney. Tom and I are on date number 6. We are meeting in Chinatown, close to my absolute favorite dim sum restaurant, where I only got food poisoning one time. I've been dying to take him here, but he's proven himself to be a bit of a workaholic, so we've been scheduling our dates around his work shifts. But the dim sum restaurant stops bringing around carts at 3, so he told me he'd take a taxi here right from work. When he said that, I got a little nervous, considering what he does for a living, but he promised he would shower before meeting me. While I'm waiting on the corner, my stomach rumbling slightly at the aroma of stir-fried noodles that seems to permeate the street, my phone starts ringing. I fish it out of my purse. My mother's name is on the screen. I check the time. I have a few minutes until Tom is supposed to be here, so I take the call. Maybe it will distract my rumbling stomach. What's going on, Mom? I ask.
I just heard fantastic news, she says breathlessly.
Oh?
Yes, my cousin's daughter Jackie just had twins at 42 years old.
My mother's good news is becoming increasingly insulting.
Wow, great.
At 42, twins. That could be you, Sydney.
I shift my phone to my other ear, looking down the street to make sure Tom isn't coming toward me.
I'm not really worrying about that right now, Mom.
Well, why not? She huffs.
You're in your mid-30s and you're single.
Am I in my mid-30s?
I'm 34.
Doesn't that count as early 30s? I mean, I'm younger than 35, so that's still early 30s, right?
And you're not even seeing anyone, she continues.
I haven't told her about my 5 dates with Tom, mostly because I don't want her getting overly excited or pushing me for details. But it's almost worse when she's complaining about me being alone.
Actually, I say, I am sort of seeing someone.
You are? She gasps, as if I've told her something extremely shocking.
Who?
Nobody you know.
Well, what's his name?
Tom.
Tom, short for Thomas?
I guess so.
What's his last name?
Brown. Unsurprisingly, Tom was very difficult to Google.
And what does he do?
Of course, that would be the first thing she would want to know after his name.
He's a doctor.
She doesn't need to know what kind of doctor he is. Sometimes I wish I didn't know.
Oh, wow! She sounds delighted now. That's great!
I lift my eyes from my phone and discover that Tom is climbing out of a taxi midway down the block. He stops for a moment on his way over to me to hand a few dollar bills to a homeless man sitting on the street, which is something he does more than anyone else I have ever met. Our eyes meet, and he waves at me.
And also, he's coming this way, so I'm going to go.
Can I say hello?
Absolutely not. Goodbye, Mom.
I manage to hang up just as Tom gets within earshot. He's changed out of whatever he was wearing to the hospital, and his hair looks damp, like he recently showered.
Good. I definitely don't want to smell dead body on him.
Because we are now on date number 6, he feels very comfortable leaning in for a kiss. And, as always, it's enough to make my legs go weak. Eventually, I'm sure that giddiness will go away, but I'm enjoying it while it lasts.
Hello there. He breathes in my ear. I hope I'm not too late.
Only a few minutes. I lead him down the crowded block, and for a moment, I wonder if he'll take my hand, but he doesn't. Tom isn't a handholder, which is fine. Jake wasn't either. We pass one of the fish markets that are present on nearly every block, then a store selling various tchotchkes and souvenirs. Tom must not have been to Chinatown in a while, because he seems intrigued by the items they're selling, even though I'm more focused on getting to dim sum before the cutoff.
Hey, he says, do you want me to buy you a decorative fan?
Thanks, but I'll pass.
How about a miniature turtle?
Sure enough, there's a tub filled with baby turtles no longer than my pinky finger. They are actually pretty adorable. Do turtles make good pets? I have no idea, but I suspect a turtle purchased off the street is probably teeming with turtle bacteria.
No, thank you.
How about some illegal fireworks? I bet they have some.
I roll my eyes at him. Great, just what I need to blow a few fingers off.
When I was an intern, I had a patient come in after a firecracker exploded in his hand, he says. We had to amputate his first and second metacarpals. They let me scrub in. It was really cool.
His eyes are lit up the way they always are whenever he talks about anything medical.
Oh, please, tell me more, I say.
Well, the burns were extensive, involving the entire palmar aspect of the...
He stops talking when he sees the look on my face.
You were being sarcastic.
Obviously. Despite all my experience with blood,
The thought of a person getting their fingers chopped off turns my stomach, and I certainly don't want to hear about it when we're about to eat. But Tom looks so crestfallen that he can't tell me all about the hand ravaged by a firecracker. He's quiet the entire rest of the way down the block. But by the time we get to the dim sum restaurant, he seems to have cheered up. When I show him the door, he jumps in front of me to open it first, holding it for me like he always does. That is definitely not an act on his part. He really is a gentleman. What can I say? He's perfect. Well, except for his job. After you, he says. As we're walking inside the restaurant, we pass two elderly women who are on their way out. One of them does a double take when she sees Tom.
Dr. Brewer? She says.
He blinks at her.
Yes?
Dr. Brewer!
She's a small, round woman with close-cropped gray hair and comically oversized glasses.
I thought that was you. My name is Velma Stewart. I'm a patient of yours.
Tom looks at her in astonishment, and she adds,
I mean, my husband was. He passed and you did his autopsy a few months ago.
Oh, recognition fills his eyes. Yes, of course. How are you, Mrs. Stewart?
Better now. Her eyes become misty for a moment. I just wanted to thank you for coming to talk to me. You told me that Harvey died quickly and in his sleep and that he didn't suffer. That gave me so much peace. And then you let me ramble on telling you stories about him for about an hour, even though I'm sure you were extremely busy.
His cheeks color. Oh, I didn't mind.
You are such a good listener, she says. You were so kind to me. It was one of the worst times of my life, and it really helped that you were there to listen. Bless you, Dr. Brewer.
Tom looks embarrassed, but he's smiling. I'm glad I could help. The old woman sets her gaze on me.
You have a good one there, young lady. She looks back over at Tom. And he's so handsome, too.
Well, I knew that part. The woman thanks Tom about 5 more times, then she ambles out of the restaurant, leaving the two of us to have our dim sum lunch together. I can tell he really enjoyed that interaction, and he's still smiling when we sit down in our booth.
That was nice, he says. I don't get to interact with patients too often, obviously. Sometimes I really miss it.
Did you always know you wanted to be a pathologist?
Actually, when I was younger, I wanted to become a surgeon.
I can imagine that. He's so smart and knowledgeable, and I have noticed he's very good with his hands. He would have been a great surgeon, I bet. Why didn't you? He rakes a hand through his black hair.
I don't know. Turned out it wasn't for me.
I glance over my shoulder at the door. The old woman is long gone. Why did she keep calling you Dr. Brewer? I wasn't sure if I should correct her. Tom hesitates for a split second.
My last name is Brewer.
What? You told me your last name was Brown.
No, it's Brewer.
You definitely said Brown. I remember it well, mostly because I was thinking at the time that Tom Brown was an impossible name to Google because there would be so many hits. And sure enough, my search turned up nothing, even when I added MD, New York, and pathologist. Not that Tom Brewer would be much better. Tom lifts a shoulder.
Sorry, you must have heard me wrong. I am 100% sure my last name is Brewer. I can show you my driver's license if you want.
I'm not sure what to make of this. I was certain he said Brown, but we were in a loud coffee shop, and my nose was gushing blood, so I admit it's possible I might not have heard him correctly. He leans in close and smiles so I can see his white teeth. Do you still like me even though I'm Tom Brewer, not Tom Brown?
I suppose.
Good.
He gets up from his seat, brushing his palms on his blue jeans.
And now I'm going to go wash my hands in the bathroom because I was just in a taxi. Grab me some shrimp shumai if they come by with it.
Excellent. Now I have a chance to Google him since I know his real name. As soon as Tom disappears into the bathroom, I whip out my phone.
I'm not messing around, so I punch into the screen, Thomas Brewer, MD pathologist. Right away, I get a hit. I click on it, and... okay, that's interesting.
Chapter 38. The one hit for Thomas Brewer is on the website for Mount Sinai Hospital. When I click on it, there's a recent photo of him, followed by a small bio. He looks incredibly handsome in the photo, dressed in a crisp white coat, his dark eyes staring into the camera. His bio mentions an undergraduate education at Cornell University, followed by medical school and a residency at the University of Pennsylvania. Impressive. But one thing stands out to me. I'm fairly sure Tom told me he was working at NYU. NYU and Mount Sinai are nowhere near each other. When he mentioned it to me, I remember thinking that his hospital was fairly close to my apartment. I would not have thought that if he'd said Mount Sinai. What the hell? I return to the search, scrolling to find other hits. There's nothing else. He doesn't have a Facebook profile. I don't see him on Instagram or Twitter, at least under his real name. And when I search on Cinch, I can't find an active or inactive profile. By the time Tom gets back from the bathroom, I am thoroughly confused. He slides into the booth across from me and grabs the menu. "Let's get some food," he says. "I'm starving." At that moment, a waitress comes by with a cart teeming with plates of food. Tom, always an adventurous eater, grabs a plate of chicken feet. I stick with the pork dumplings. But while Tom eagerly digs into his food, I just stare at my dumplings, my appetite gone. "Hey," I say as casually as I can, "what hospital did you say you worked at?" This time, there's no hesitation. "Mount Sinai." "I could have sworn you told me you worked at NYU." He arches an eyebrow at me, an amused smile playing on his lips.
"Were you looking me up on your phone while I was in the bathroom?"
Busted. Although part of me feels that he is more busted than I am. "So what if I was? You definitely told me you work at NYU.
"I used to work at NYU," he says. "I recently switched over. Maybe I was so enamored with you that I misspoke."
Is that possible? I suppose it is. But the whole thing, combined with the wrong name, leaves me feeling slightly uneasy. I could accept that one was a mistake, but both? Then again, I can't forget that the only reason this is happening in the first place is because a woman came up to Tom to gush about how compassionate he was when she was suffering from the loss of her husband. And I believe it. I've dated a lot of guys, and I can tell that Tom is a nice guy. It's hard to believe that he really would have lied to me. "How come you don't have a Cinch profile?" I ask. A smile plays on his lips. "Is this a trick question? You and I are dating, right? Do you want me to have a Cinch profile?"
"No," I say.
"I just mean most single people in the city are on that app."
"I'm just not into dating apps."
"Then how do you meet women?" He grins at me.
"Mostly, I just look around for girls having nosebleeds and offer to buy them a new shirt. Usually works."
"Ha ha, very funny." He arches an eyebrow.
"But if it bothers you, I'm happy to put up a profile on all the dating apps."
Now he's being a smartass, which I suppose is fair given my line of questioning. "No, thank you." Or, he reaches across the table for my hand.
"Maybe you can delete your profile too, and we can just see each other. How about that?"